Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:02 p.m. and that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is May 8th and I'd like to start off today by looking at Tencent Holdings because it did spectacularly well last year. It had a clear example of a loss of consistency at the penultimate high back in December. It then posted a lower high and a very large downside key reversal in, I think that was in March. And now it is back in the region of the trend mean, and it has broken its progression of higher reaction lows. Now, Tencent is not just a large company, it's not just a leader in the online gaming and social media sector within China, but it is also one of the major constituents of the MSCI Emerging Markets Index. And China tends to have a rather large influence on what happens with the Emerging Markets Index. Now, one important characteristic of this index is that it is dollar denominated. It has also broken its progression of higher reaction lows and it is back in the region of the trend mean. So what happens with Tencent is likely to have an influence on what happens with the emerging markets index. But there is another important characteristic here, and it is that the dollar spent a good part of the last few years trending lower against the euro in particular. It has now broken its progression, that's not quite true. It has broken back above the trend mean against when measured by the dollar index, and that's majority euro and yen. The euro is trading back below its trend mean. It declined additionally today on the collapse of negotiations for a new Italian government. Now, when we look at, for example, the Asia dollar index, then we're also presented with a rather significant dollar rally. This is showing the dollar, or this is inverse. So when it was trending higher in 2007, that was the outperformance of Asian currencies. Again, this is heavily weighted by the Chinese renminbi, and that is obviously going to have an influence on how people think about emerging markets. But the renminbi and then the Hong Kong dollar, which is pegged, but the renminbi occupies 41.8% of the index. If we start to look at some of the other additional constituents of this index, then we're given a rather different picture. The Indian rupee has been weakening, but it's not accelerating lower. The Indonesian rupiah is pushing new reaction lows. So that's the dollar breaking upwards against the rupiah, having been really very stable over the course of the last few years. Then when we look at, for example, the Malaysian ringgit, we're starting to see evidence now of the dollar starting to find support, and it certainly increases the potential that oversold condition relative to the trend mean is going to be unwound. The Thai baht, which has been among the stronger currencies over the course of the last year, is also engaged in at least a mean reversion back, and it is now in the process of breaking the dollar's progression of lower rally highs since the beginning of 2017. It's not just an Asia story, it's a commodity story too. The South African rand, having strengthened really quite considerably after Zuma was ousted from power, is now back testing the region of the trend mean. The Brazilian real does look like that it is now in a supply-dominated environment. This is a substantial breakout on behalf of the dollar, and that's before we even begin to think about some of the more troubled currencies. The Argentine peso, for example, has been breaking down over the course of the last few weeks. The Turkish lira is also not in a particularly healthy position. And the Philippine peso has also been in a rather consistent decline against the US dollar over the course of the last 5 years. When you start to string all of this together, what we're presented with is a broad-based dollar rally. And that's going to have a knock-on effect for some of these emerging markets. One of the points that international investors like most about investing in emerging markets is that generally speaking, when you get a rally in emerging markets, the flow of funds into those countries helps to strengthen the currency. So you get currency market, capital market, and then you also get to pick up the yield appreciation as well. Well, that's all fine until you start to see some of the currencies come under pressure. Then the rationale for being aggressively invested in emerging markets starts to deteriorate when you have the potential for the dollar to rally. It also would start to pressure some carry trades. The dollar has been so very weak for so very long that there are going to be some people that were leveraged on the short side, and part of the reason that we're getting such a broad-based rally right now has to be because some of those carry trades are being unwound. And that suggests that there is some risk in the emerging markets sector right now. And then when you go back and think about Tencent and the weighting that it has, well, that's going to have an influence on the emerging markets index. If the dollar rally starts to pressure some of the other constituents in that index, then that will contribute to some underperformance there, which could have a knock-on effect. So you get this to and fro in terms of influences. So it is rather important to monitor these charts right now, because they're right in the region of their respective trend means. If Tencent and the emerging markets, MSCI Emerging Markets Index, can find support here, well, then there won't be a great deal to worry about. But it is a key area where people will be beginning to think about support coming back in. And oil prices today were quite volatile. They got right down to the lower side of the range ahead of President Trump's announcement that he was withdrawing the USA from the Iran nuclear agreement. The other signatories to the agreement were very swift to step in quickly and say that they were going to continue to support the agreement, but that has contributed to a rebound on oil prices, and they're down about 50 cents off the peak today, but still above the $75 area. And perhaps the more important point is that over the course of the last 3 weeks, oil has been confined to a very narrow range. This has been the smaller of any of the ranges that we've really seen since June of last year. And what that suggests is that we're still in a demand-dominated environment. We're still in a backwardation environment. So there is a supply deficit in the short term. And if we do see some of Iran's supply being withdrawn from the market, then, well, that is going to just represent another bullish aspect to the broad environment. A reaction of more than $2.50 would really be required to suggest that we're getting more than a very short-term pause, and a sustained move below the trend mean would be required to question the demand-dominated environment over the medium term. When we look at the continuous commodity index, then that's an unweighted index, and it is right at the upper side of what is now a two-year range. We are getting a little bit of a pause and consolidation. Part of the reason for that is we've had some pause in the appreciation of the agricultural commodities, but not really in a dynamic manner. The other interesting market in here today was gold, and it was able to close well off its lows in here today, but it really does require upside follow-through tomorrow to begin to break the downward bias that it has had for much of the last month. What I find quite interesting is that because it's the US dollar that's rallying, then if we look at gold in other currencies, it's in fact much stronger. I think that is an important characteristic. For example, it is breaking out of its short-term range against the Australian dollar. Against the Brazilian real, it's continuing to push higher. Against the Canadian dollar, it's also firming. Against the pound, it's at the upper side of its range. So when we go back and look at it versus the US dollar, which of course is the futures traded contract, well, it's a testament to just how firm the dollar has been over the course of the last 3 or 4 weeks, that gold is only now at the lower side of its range. But it is also a testament to the relative strength of gold and the fact that it does represent something of a hedge from the perspective of those that may be looking for protection against depreciating currencies elsewhere, that it is at the lower side of the range and hasn't in fact broken down. It's now right in the region of the trend mean against the US dollar. And this is a logical area where people will start to begin to think about additional upside. The gold miners index has been inert for most of the last 18 months, and it has been creeping upwards over the course of the last few weeks and has firmed again. So there is a progression of higher reaction lows since February. It really does need to push back above 23 to begin to push through the middle of this range and to open up the potential that it is going to go right back up and test the upper side. And I think if it can do that, then we'll have a much, more convincing argument that it is primed for a breakout. Gold does have attractive characteristics in this kind of environment, where something that has been at the back of my mind for the last few weeks is that David and I have been working together since 2003. So for 15 years, we could go without really paying a great deal of attention to politics. That it really wasn't something that you had to pay particular attention to. And I was rather diligent in trying not to comment about the political environment, because you're sure to insult somebody. But today, it's virtually impossible to participate in markets and not take some account of the political environment. And what that suggests is that we do have an additional risk premium in this environment, and that isn't an inconsiderable event. Generally speaking, we look at the supply and demand dynamics in terms of crowd psychology, and we look at money supply in terms of what central banks are doing. But now we have to also consider what the vicissitudes of the political class are likely to be. And we're in a medium-term corrective phase. We had some acceleration towards the end of last year and to the beginning of this year, and now we're back in a corrective phase. But so far, it is holding the region of the trend mean. Even back in 2015, it dipped back below the trend mean. It wasn't nearly as overextended back then as it was back in January. But I think that the 2500 point level is a big psychological Rubicon for the S&P 500. It was in mildly negative territory in here today, but considering just how much news flow there has been, that's actually not a bad performance at all. Then, when we think about what is the leader in this environment, well, the Nasdaq has certainly been in contention there. But also we have to consider the role of the dollar here, because when you look at, for example, a UK technology trust, then is denominated in pounds, and that is back right at the upper side of its range. And in fact, the PCT, the Polar Capital Technology Trust, is still trading at a discount to NAV. So what that suggests is that despite the fact that you're getting the dollar, I think, weighing on gold in US dollars and weighing somewhat on the stock market, it's flattering the US markets in just about every other currency, because you have this this dollar strength. And I think that that is an important characteristic, because the US government is going to be issuing an awful lot of debt, and yields today were in positive territory. They didn't quite hold all of the move upwards in yields, but we're at 2.97%. This has been, so far, a very mild consolidation in the region of this big psychological level. And when we look at that on a 10-year basis, think about the kind of violence that we saw in the bond markets back in 2013 during the teeth of the the taper tantrum. It was a very different environment, and the lack of volatility in the bond markets and the persistence of weakness is, I think, something that does bear, I think, would behoove us to keep at the front of our minds. You had Jamie Dimon talking about 4% on Treasury yields, and if we start to see that, well, obviously that is then going to have a knock-on effect for valuations when the relative comparison of the valuation versus the government bond yield is made. For the kinds of companies that are, well, would be considered bond proxies, then that's going to represent a challenge. And the underperformance of the consumer staples sector is certainly noteworthy because it is among the bigger, or it was among the destinations that people really looked to for a bond proxy. And it is continuing to break down. We have had very little evidence of support coming through. When we look at that on the yield, it's pushing back up towards that psychological 3.5% level. Something I talked about in the Friday audio was the potential here that 3.5% may not hold, because when the last time we got to yields at this level, which was back in 2009, the government bond yield was quite a bit lower than that, and we were on a trajectory for lower federal funds rates, whereas now it is looking like we're going to see higher Fed funds rates. And that means that some of these shares are going to have to demonstrate a more competitive dividend environment. That's why they're being sold at the moment. I suspect that eventually they're going to start getting bought again, because people will come to realize that these are truly big international companies and that they do have the potential to continue to grow in a along with the rise of the global consumer. So it is really only a question of the price at which people are willing to change their minds and start to reappreciate this environment. But that's also something that we see in medium-term corrections, that the commonality or the consistency of the advances in the entire market starts to break down and you get some disparity in performances. The kinds of shares that are doing best right now are those that have got consumer-oriented businesses, and excuse me, not consumer, excuse me, not consumer-oriented businesses, but subscription-oriented businesses. Those that have adopted a subscription business model, it gives them the opportunity to raise prices in a stealth way. It also gives them much more consistency in terms of their cash flows that makes them way more modelable than they would normally have been, and it takes the cyclicality out of their business models. So that is something that I think is likely to continue to be a significant trend in this market. I think it's only a matter of time before ETFs are set up that support a subscription business model. At that point, I think people will start to pay much closer attention to the evolution of this sector. And then you also have the fact that the luxury goods sector is breaking out. And there must be two reasons for that. One is that Chinese demand is picking up once more, but there is the other potential outcome that people are front-loading their purchases because they're worried about inflation, and that luxury goods companies have no compunction about raising their prices if they see that interest rates are rising. And that also gives them a moat in terms of their protection from the inflation fears that I think are beginning to be manifested, not least in the bond markets, but elsewhere as well. Then, when we look at what's going on in Europe, well, the weakness of the euro is going to be of a benefit in nominal terms for the European indices. And the Euro Stoxx is coming back up towards this 400 level. It's been ranging below 400 now for really quite some time already, and it is substantially below the peaks that we saw back in 2000 and again in 2007. So I think it isn't at all beyond the bounds of possibility that we see a break above that 400-point level and a race back up towards a retest of the peaks if we continue to see some additional euro weakness. The Italian index has paused around just around the 24,000 level, and this is 25,000 has been an area of psychological resistance for the better part of the last 9 years. Now the index is a bit overbought in the short term, and obviously you have a great deal of political uncertainty with regard to Italy. Political uncertainty is nothing, is not, oh, I guess Italian investors are no strangers to political instability. Quite whether they end up with a populist government remains to be seen, but it is looking increasingly likely. If that is going to have a knock-on effect for the companies, I think is a different story entirely. The fact that you have very narrow yields or yield spreads on the Italian debt suggests that its Italian debt is at risk rather than the stock market. And really, a sustained move below the trend mean would be required to question potential for the Italian index to break on the upside and remain one of the leaders for the European area. The German DAX has stabilized around the 12,000 level, and it has been a clear outperformer over the course of this decade. And as long as it's holding that 12,000 level, I think people are going to be willing to give it the benefit of the doubt. Just as in many markets, the MDAX, the mid-caps, have been outperforming the large caps in Germany for most of the time from 2009 onwards, and have bounced rather, I think, impressively from the 25,000 level. So when we look around the world, we are in a medium-term correction, but and there is certainly a change in the downtrend for the dollar. That is, I think, going to create some rotation, not just within stock markets, but also within weightings or within how people are investing their entire portfolios, either within the U.S. or internationally. It's certainly going to be a topic that we'll be monitoring over the course of the next few months at least. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.